Chapter 29. Architect's desperate circumstances, begging him to convey the news in some way to Miss Power. De Stancy promised to make representations in the proper quarter without perceiving that he was doing the best possible deed for himself thereby. He told Paula of Avil's misfortunes in the presence of his sister, who turned pale. She discerned how this misfortune would bear upon the undecided competition. Poor man, apostrophe murmured Paula. He was my father's architect, and somehow expected, though I did not promise it, the work of rebuilding the castle. Apostrophe apostrophe, then De Stancy saw Dare's aim in sending him to Miss Power with the news, and, seeing it, concurred. Somerset was his rival, and all was fair. And is he not to have the work of the castle after expecting it? Apostrophe apostrophe, he asked. Paula was lost in reflection. The other architect's design and Mr. Avil's are exactly equal in merit, and we cannot decide how to give it to either, apostrophe explained Charlotte. That is our difficulty, apostrophe Paula murmured. A bankrupt, and his wife ill, dear me. I wonder what's the cause. Apostrophe, he has borrowed on the expectation of having to execute the castle works, and now he is unable to meet his liabilities. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is very sad, apostrophe said Paula. Let me suggest a remedy for this deadlock, apostrophe said De Stancy. Do, apostrophe said Paula. Do the work of building in two halves or sections. Give Avil the first half, since he is in need. When that is finished, the second half can be given to your London architect. If, as I understand, the plans are identical, except in ornamental details, there will be no difficulty about it at all. Apostrophe apostrophe, Paula sighed just a little one, and yet the suggestion seemed to satisfy her by its reasonableness. She turned sad, wayward, but was impressed by De Stancy's manner and words. She appeared indeed to have a smoldering desire to please him. In the afternoon she said to Charlotte, I mean to do as your brother says. Apostrophe apostrophe, a note was dispatched to Avil that very day, and in an hour the crestfallen architect presented himself at the castle. Paula instantly gave him audience, commiserated him, and commissioned him to carry out a first section of the buildings, comprising work to the extent of about £20,000 expenditure. And then, with a prematureness quite amazing among architects' clients, she handed him over a check for £500 on account. When he had gone, Paula's bearing showed some sign of being disquieted at what he had done, but she covered her mood under a cloak of saucy serenity. Perhaps a tender remembrance of a certain thunderstorm in the foregoing August, when she stood with Somerset in the arbor, and did not own that she loved him, was pressing on her memory and bewildering her. As he had not seen quite clearly, in adopting De Stancy's suggestion, that Somerset would now have no professional reason for being at the castle for the next 12 months. But the captain had, and when Avil entered the castle he rejoiced with great joy. Dare too, rejoiced in his cold way, and went on with his photography, saying, the game progresses, Captain. Apostrophe apostrophe, game? Call it divine comedy, rather. Apostrophe said the soldier exultingly. He is practically banished for a year more. What can you do in a year, Captain? Apostrophe apostrophe, Avil, in the meantime, having respectfully withdrawn from the presence of Paula, passed by Dare and De Stancy in the gallery as he had done in entering. He spoke a few words to Dare, who congratulated him. While they were talking, somebody was heard in the hall, inquiring hastily for Mr. Avil. What shall I tell him? Apostrophe apostrophe, demanded the porter. His wife is dead, apostrophe said the messenger. Avil overheard the words, and hastened away. An unlucky man. Apostrophe apostrophe said Dare. That, happily for us, will not affect his installation here, apostrophe said De Stancy. Now hold your tongue, and keep at a distance. She may come this way. ." Surely enough, in a few minutes she came. The Stancy, to make conversation, told her of the new misfortune which had just befallen Mr. Havil. Paula was very sorry to hear it, and remarked that it gave her great satisfaction to have appointed him as architect of the first wing, before he learnt the bad news. "I owe you best thanks, Captain de Stancy, for showing me such an expedient. Do I really deserve thanks? Asked de Stancy. "I wish I deserved a reward, but I must bear in mind the fable of the priest and the jester. I never heard it. The jester implored the priest for alms, but the smallest sum was refused, though the holy man readily agreed to give him his blessing. Query, its value? How does it apply? You give me unlimited thanks, but deny me the tiniest substantial trifle I desire. What persistence! Exclaimed Paula, coloring. "Very well, if you will photograph my picture you must. It is really not worthy further pleading. Take it when you like." When Paula was alone she seemed vexed with herself for having given way, and rising from her seat she went quietly to the door of the room containing the picture, intending to lock it up till further consideration, whatever he might think of her. But on casting her eyes round the apartment the painting was gone. The captain, wisely taking the current when it served, already had it in the gallery, where he was to be seen bending attentively over it, arranging the lights and directing there with the instruments. On leaving he thanked her, and said that he had obtained a splendid copy. Would she look at it? Paula was severe and icy. "Thank you, I don't wish to see it," she said. De Stancy bowed and departed in a glow of triumph, satisfied, notwithstanding her frigidity, that he had compassed his immediate aim, which was that she might not be able to dismiss from her thoughts him, and his persevering desire for the shadow of her face during the next 24 hours. And his confidence was well founded. She could not. "I fear this divine comedy will be slow business for us, Captain," said Dare, who had heard her cold words. "Oh no," said de Stancy, flushing a little. He had not been perceiving that the lad had the measure of his mind so entirely as to gauge his position at any moment. But he would show no shamefacedness. "Even if it is, my boy," he answered, "there's plenty of time before the other can come." At that hour and minute of de Stancy's remark the other, to look at him, seemed indeed securely shelved. He was sitting lonely in his chambers far away, wondering why she did not write, and yet hoping to hear wondering, if it had all been but a short-lived strain of tenderness. He knew as well as if it had been stated in words, that her serious acceptance of him as a suitor would be her acceptance of him as an architect, that her schemes in love would be expressed in terms of art, and conversely that her refusal of him as a lover would be neatly effected by her choosing Havil's plans for the castle, and returning his own with thanks. The position was so clear. He was so well walled in by circumstances, that he was absolutely helpless. To wait for the line, that would not come the letter saying that, as he had desired, his was the design, that pleased her was still the only thing to do. The to Somerset, surprising accident, that the committee of architects should have pronounced the designs absolutely equal in point of merit, and thus have caused the final choice to revert after all to Paula, had been a joyous thing to him, when he first heard of it, full of confidence in her favor. But the fact of her having again become the arbitrator, though it had made acceptance of his plans all the more probable, made refusal of them, should it happen, all the more crushing. He could have conceived himself favored by Paula as her lover, even had the committee decided in favor of Havil as her architect. But not to be chosen as architect now was to be rejected in both kinds. IV. It was the Sunday following the funeral of Mrs. Avil, news of whose death had been so unexpectedly brought to her husband at the moment of his exit from Stancy Castle. The minister, as was his custom, improved the occasion by a couple of sermons on the uncertainty of life. One was preached in the morning in the old chapel of Markton, the second at evening service in the rural chapel near Stancy Castle, built by Paula's father, which bore to the first somewhat the relation of an episcopal chapel of ease to the mother church. The unscreened lights blazed through the plate glass windows of the smaller building, and outshone the steely stars of the early night, just as they had done when Somerset was attracted by their glare 4 months before. The fervid minister's rhetoric equaled its force on that more romantic occasion. But Paula was not there. She was not a frequent attendant now at her father's votive building. The mysterious tank, whose dark waters had so repelled her at the last moment, was boarded over. A table stood on its center, with an open quarto Bible upon it, behind which Havil, in a new suit of black, sat in a large chair. Havil held the office of deacon. And he had mechanically taken the deacon's seat as usual tonight, in the face of the congregation, and under the nose of Mr. Woodwell. Mr. Woodwell was always glad of an opportunity. He was gifted with a burning natural eloquence, which, though perhaps a little too freely employed in exciting the wortherism of the uncultivated, apostrophe had in it genuine power. He was a master of that oratory which no limitation of knowledge can repress, and which no training can impart. The neighboring rector could eclipse Woodwell's scholarship, and the freethinker at the corner shop in Markton could demolish his logic, but the Baptist could do in 5 minutes what neither of these had done in a lifetime. He could move some of the hardest of men to tears. Thus it happened that, when the sermon was fairly underway, Havil began to feel himself in a trying position. It was not that he had bestowed much affection upon his deceased wife, irreproachable woman as he had been, but the suddenness of her death had shaken his nerves, and Mr. Woodwell's address on the uncertainty of life involved considerations of conduct on earth that bore with singular directness upon Avil's unprincipled maneuver for victory in the castle competition. He wished he had not been so inadvertent as to take his customary chair in the chapel. People who saw Havil's agitation did not know that it was most largely owing to his sense of the fraud which had been practiced on the unoffending Somerset. And when, unable longer to endure the torture of Woodwell's words, he rose from his place and went into the chapel vestry, the preacher little thought that remorse for a contemptibly unfair act, rather than grief for a dead wife, was the cause of the architect's withdrawal. When Avil got into the open air, his morbid excitement calmed down, but a sickening self-abhorrence for the proceeding instigated by dare did not abate. To appropriate another man's design was no more, nor less than to embezzle his money or steal his goods. The intense reaction from his conduct of the past 2 or 3 months did not leave him when he reached his own house and observed where the handbills of the countermanded sale had been torn down as the result of the payment made in advance by Paula of money which should really have been Somerset's. The mood went on intensifying when he was in bed. He lay awake till the clock reached those still, small ghastly hours when the vital fires burn at their lowest in the human frame, and death seizes more of his victims than in any other of the 24. Havil could bear it no longer. He got a light, went down into his office, and wrote the notes subjoined. Madam, the recent death of my wife necessitates a considerable change in my professional arrangements and plans with regard to the future. One of the chief results of the change is, I regret to state, that I no longer find myself in a position to carry out the enlargement of the castle which you had so generously entrusted to my hands. I beg leave, therefore, to resign all further connection with the same, and to express, if you will allow me, a hope that the commission may be placed in the hands of the other competitor. Herewith is returned a check for 1/2 of the sum so kindly advanced in anticipation of the commission I should receive. the other half, with which I had cleared off my immediate embarrassments, before perceiving the necessity for this course, shall be returned to you as soon as some payments from other clients drop in. I beg to remain, Madam, your obedient servant, James Havill. Havill would not trust himself till the morning to post this letter. He sealed it up, went out with it into the street, and walked through the sleeping town to the post office. At the mouth of the box he held the letter long. By dropping it, he was dropping at least £2,500 which, however obtained, were now securely his. It was a great deal to let go, and there he stood till another wave of conscience bore in upon his soul the absolute nature of the theft, and made him shudder. The footsteps of a solitary policeman could be heard nearing him along the deserted street. Hesitation ended, and he let the letter go. When he awoke in the morning he thought over the circumstances by the cheerful light of a low eastern sun. The horrors of the situation seemed much less formidable, yet it cannot be said that he actually regretted his act. Later on he walked out, with the strange sense of being a man who, from one having a large professional undertaking in hand, had, by his own act, suddenly reduced himself to an unoccupied nondescript. From the upper end of the town he saw in the distance the grand gray towers of Stancy Castle looming over the leafless trees. He felt stupefied at what he had done, and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.